Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another coronavirus episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, you can hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me by ordering the memoir of Brian Grant and his battle with young onset Parkinson's called Rebound. Pre-ordered copies are available now on Amazon. You can also follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places. But there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA, and that is here. And it's my great pleasure to introduce this episode's guest, Rodney Hood of the Portland Trailblazers. And I could tell just by when we said hello this morning that Rodney is feeling good, and well, he should be, because we're recording this the day after the Blazers just knocked off the Philadelphia 76ers. CJ McCollum not available, Damian Lillard not available, and yet you guys got the job done, and you played, if I'm not mistaken, this is two games in a row, 30-plus minutes for somebody coming back from an Achilles tendon injury. That has to feel awfully good where you are right now.
Yeah, most definitely. Appreciate you having me. And I think it's a big confidence booster, not just for me, but for our team. You know, going in playing Philly, who's one of the best teams in the league, without, you know, most of our starters and guys who played major minutes, we had nothing to lose. So, It was a fun game last night.
So what was the, like, what was the mindset? What did Terry tell you guys? Terry Stotts, the head coach, what did he tell you guys, you know, coming in, playing arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference and being so shorthanded?
Well, he just told us to go out and compete. You know, go out and compete, go out and put some game pressure on them, and we'll see what happens. You know, obviously we knew it was going to be an uphill battle without Dame and a lot of other guys, and CJ and a lot of other guys. But you know, we just fought. You know, and that's all he wanted from us, and it just wound up turning in our favor where we, you know, hit a couple shots. You know, we got some stops, and you know, it just turned their way.
Was there a point for you where you looked at it or within the game where you went, damn, we could get this thing? Like, we're not just competing. Like, we could get this.
Yeah, I felt it in the first quarter. Like, you know, we had a really good vibe to us. And we know they're a good team and they was going to have a run or two. You know, Joel Embiid is probably one of the hardest guys in the league to stop right now. No, I think probably at the beginning of the third quarter, we went on a run right out the gate, and we kind of knew it was going to be a game for us to win. We just had to keep our composure, but it felt good. It felt good just to be in that type of environment.
No doubt. I usually do an icebreaker with everybody who comes on the show, and it's looking at specifically your middle name, but Rodney Michael Hood. Who were you named after? Or where did Rodney Michael come from?
You know what? That's an interesting question. I would have to ask my mom. I really don't even know. I mean, maybe I was born in 92, so maybe Michael Jordan. I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Okay. There's probably a few guys who were named after MJ one way or another, right?
Exactly.
All right. So for people who may not know, you tore your left Achilles a year ago in December and missed the remainder of the season. But this is actually the second Achilles that you've torn, right? You tore the right one at Duke, if I'm not mistaken.
No, this is the first one.
This is the first one.
No, I've had like some tendonitis a couple of times throughout my career, but you know, I actually tore it for the first time in December.
Okay, because there was a report out there that I read that you had torn your right one at Duke, that it, they thought originally an ankle injury, but it was worse than that. But I guess that's not accurate.
No. I had a tendonitis. I was playing, USA basketball at the time in mm-hmm. college.
Okay.
And I had some tendonitis, so I didn't go overseas with the team.
Got you. By the way, I told my son that I was having you on the show, and he said, tell him I'm a big fan. So
yeah,
I tell you, I tell you that he said it to me like it meant something, like let Rodney know I'm a big fan. I'm like, okay, I'm sure it's going to make an impression on him. I'll tell him. So his name's Matt. You want to give him a shout out sometime? Feel free. But he's a big Blazers fan, and he's a big fan of yours. And I got to say, I am impressed by, I thought it was two Achilles, but your bounce, man, your bounce is amazing considering that. Most guys, I just think about like what you were like coming up, how much bounce you had, but what was it like for you once you had that Achilles? I mean, that's got to be a little terrifying in terms of what am I going to be like on the other side of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a daily battle. You know what I mean? It's one of the toughest, well, it's probably the toughest thing I had to go through as far as basketball. And just every day, you just wake up with a certain doubt. You know, everybody, whether it's a doctor, whether it's family, whoever tells you that you're never going to be the same. And, you know, that just builds in your mind. That doubt builds in your mind. But, you know, I just went to work every day. And, you know, starting off the season, it's still terrifying, you know, to, you know, are you going to re-rupture it? You know, this going to happen. And it takes a while for you to just build that confidence back up to where you had it before you got injured. And I think I'm almost there, you know, as far as just being confident and all the work that I put in.
Yeah. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, and we talked about this a year ago when we were actually able to, media and players were able to cross paths and see each other in person. But we talked about your transformation as a player and how you have learned to deal with pressure. And I looking at your career, I mean, you made some pretty big moves early on in your career. You won a high school championship. You played a lot as a freshman at Mississippi State and then transferred to Duke. I don't know how many guys make that move before and having to sit out a year. Did you feel pressure at those lower levels? How did you deal with it in the earlier parts of your career, considering how much you accomplished?
Yeah, I mean, I dealt with a lot of pressure, you know, starting off in Mississippi. You know, I made a goal for myself to try to be one of the best players ever to come from there. And it's a lot of great players that came from, that's played in the NBA, that's had great careers that I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to put my name with them. And, you know, I couldn't do that without winning a championship. And, my junior year I lost, and then my senior year I finally won. And then going to Mississippi State with a lot of pressure, being a hometown or home state kid, you know, trying to live up to that.
Yep.
You know, things didn't work out as well as I wanted to. Then, you know, going to Duke, you know, was the epitome of pressure. You know, when you're talking college basketball, mm-hmm. you know, the standard is so high. and every single game, every single year, they expected to win. And that made me better though by going through it.
Yeah, what was that year at Duke? What was it sitting out a year like? What did you do with your? I mean, how did you keep yourself occupied or not having things kind of go sideways? Just not having basketball as a frame of reference.
Right. It was tough, but I had a great support system, Coach K, and all the guys, Coach Shire, Coach Capel, who's now at Pitt. Really kept me encouraged. Wojo, Chris Collins, all those guys. And, I treated practice like my games, and I really got better in that year I set out. I got stronger. Off the court, it was crazy because, the team was leaving, going on a roll. I had to stay back.
Yeah.
And that's where, me and my wife, really got close. She played at Duke, and we met, and we would go to the movies and just try to keep myself occupied, so it wasn't that tough. So,
yeah.
I had a great, it was a great year, and I appreciated that year too.
You guys ever get on the court? You guys ever play games against each other? How did that romance go? How much was basketball involved in the romance?
It was a big part. It was a big part. That's what brought us together. Her playing basketball and me coming there for basketball, and we kind of got close during the football season, where the girls team and the boys team kind of do activities together,
mm-hmm.
Saturday mornings and stuff like that. And we was friends at first, and then naturally became I swept off her feet, and it was just great. We play a lot of one on one and just shooting in the gym together, had a lot of long talks just in the gym late night, thinking about, her dreams, my dreams, all those type of things. So I think that's why they drew us closer together.
Yeah, no doubt. So you get to, you're drafted by Utah. You go to the Jazz. And I was thinking about this actually last night, because I was thinking about Ellerby and Anthony Simons and these young guys who come in with the Blazers with these established veterans. And if I recall, the Jazz team you joined was really young. Was it not? I mean, right. Who's your vet?
My vet was really the only real vet on our team was Trevor Booker. And everybody else, like Gordon, was probably in his fifth year.
Yeah.
And everybody was in there either fifth year or lower, like everybody's on a rookie contract, I feel like, on the team. And maybe Jeremy Evans, if you remember, was a slam dunk contest winner and all that. I came into a young team, and it was fortunate for me, I got a chance to play early on, which not a lot of guys get to do.
Mm-hmm. But what is that like? Like, what's the difference when you look at the experience that maybe Anthony or Ellerby are having with this team versus your experience? What's the good and what's the challenge of being on a young team? Obviously, the good is you got the chance to play right away. I'm wondering if there's some things that you see Ellerby and Simons experiencing that you learned later, just because, I mean, you guys were probably all borrowing Booker, right? As the vet, like he probably had more than one guy, which isn't always the case.
Right, right. I mean, I think it's always great to learn while you're actually out there. I think as a young player, it can be frustrating to have the talent, to have the ability, but not play because you're just playing behind great players. And me and Ant talk all the time, just about. I personally feel if he came into a situation like mine or where he got a chance to play, he'd be one of the best up and coming players in the league. That's a guy people would be talking about.
Yeah.
But sometimes people just gotta wait their turn, and it's frustrating. And but I think once he's going to get a shot, as people see glimpses now, but once he actually get a shot, people will be he's gonna be an amazing player. The Blazers organization is a great organization. I got drafted into a great organization, with Utah, and we struggled probably my first year, and my second year we were on the glimpse of making the playoffs, but my third year we took off, and now obviously they're a great great team now, but it started with, you know, I came in with Quinn Snyder. His first year was my first year. And coming into that type of environment really made, you know, us better, even though we weren't winning games at the time.
And I have to think, as a guy from Mississippi, I mean, you were never a big city guy. And some guys struggle playing in Salt Lake or going to Salt Lake. How was that for you, going there and starting your career in Salt Lake City?
It was actually kind of a shock because when I did pre-draft workouts and interviews and all these things, like I didn't meet with Utah. I may have met with them for like 5 minutes, and then I didn't work out there. So when I was in the draft, Utah was not on my mind at all. And they wound up I slid a little bit in the draft, and then I wound up falling to 23, and I got drafted by Utah. And you know, I looked at, you know, the situation I was going in. I was just excited to play basketball to get it going, you know, and you know, just going into that situation with a clean slate, being able to prove myself, I think was just a match made in heaven. You know, I loved my time there. You know, it was great being there. But just going there, it was kind of a shock because I didn't know nothing about Salt Lake at all. You know, at all. So it was good though.
Wow. Where did you? I'm trying to recall. Were you in the green room for the draft?
Yeah, I was. You know, going into draft night, I was told, well, my agent at the time was told that, you know, probably 16 would be the lowest I'll drop.
Yeah.
Or if I was at 16, they would take me, a certain team would take me. But
who was that? Who was at 16?
It was Chicago at the time.
Okay.
So Chicago had the 16th pick, but they wind up getting two picks to trade for, I think they had 16 and 19. They got two picks for Doug McDermott.
Okay.
To move up. Yeah. And then I wind up falling to Utah.
Now, how much do you still carry around, like, guys that went ahead of you? I still, you know, I go back to Paul Pierce used to work out, and he'd, like, with every shot, he'd say the name of a dude that was drafted ahead of him because I think he went 10th and he expected to go much higher. When you see a guy, when you see McDermott or you see any other guy, you know, that was taken ahead of you or where you thought you were going to go, is there any added like motivation to show the team that didn't take you or any of that? How long does that last?
It doesn't last that long for me. Because like I said, when I came in, I had an opportunity to play and I saw, you know, guys that were drafted ahead of me that on probably better teams that had better players playing in front of them, they didn't get that opportunity. So that's when I learned, like, draft position is cool, it's good, you know, especially if you're in the first round, getting guaranteed money and all those things. But at the end of the day, it's all about getting the opportunity, and I had that. So I left that alone, you know. I just wanted to make my stamp in the league. And I think things like I said on draft night, things like that will be proven over time. That, you know, when people do like the redraft things and where you would be drafted and all those, then the people will see. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just fortunate enough to just get an opportunity.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so, by the way, I should have asked you, how much does your wife, even at this point, critique your game? Like, how much conversation do you guys have about what's going on with you on the court?
All the time. Every single day.
Really?
Every single day. Like, me and her are like polar opposites when it comes to basketball. She's, you know, I've been known as the more unselfish guy.
Yeah.
You know, not you know, as aggressive as I should be and stuff like that. She's complete opposite. She wants me to shoot the ball every single time, you know, get up 30 attempts a night. But that's why I love it. She holds me accountable. She doesn't sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
You know, she's there for me, you know, when I'm down, but she's always truthful too. So that's a big plus.
So how did she feel about what you did last night?
She feels great. You know, she's been with me through this process. She tore her ACL, so, well, Achilles may be a little tougher than ACL, but she knows how the process is, the mental aspect of just coming back and getting back to yourself. So, you know, that starting out the season is just about getting my feet wet, you know, just getting better, getting back in game shape, getting my body back in game shape, because I didn't get an opportunity to do it before the season. But she understands. You know, and that's the biggest thing. So games like last night, which, you know, I probably only scored like 16.
Yeah.
But to her, that felt like 30. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yep.
Because of what I've been through.
Yeah, for sure. And how do you pronounce her name?
Richay.
Richay.
You just call her Shay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. R-I-C-H-A, correct?
Right, right. But yeah. It's pronounced Richay.
So my last name, Bucher, like people, I always have a problem with this when I go to the grocery store or someplace. People take shots at pronouncing it, and they always screw it up. So I've always decided, look, if you don't know how to pronounce it, just ask first. Like, don't mess it up. Like, it's okay. I'll tell you. So I didn't want to take a stab at it and get it woefully wrong. So I figured I'd take my own advice.
No, you'll be all right. I don't think it's one person that got her name right at the first try after reading it. It's always Rika or Richa or something like that.
So. I was going to go Richay, which is not that far off, but yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, okay. Well, but I'm glad I took the safe approach. I feel better about that. So, again, you go through the evolution. You go to Utah. You're in Utah, and things are evolving. And then you wind up in Cleveland. What was that experience like? Because you were there parts of two seasons. Like, you got traded halfway through one season, and then we're moving on again the next season. What was that experience like?
It was an experience, you know. It's a experience that I wouldn't trade for the world. You know, I learned a lot throughout that process. You know, I kind of knew I was kind of gonna get traded from Utah. Like the rumors were very loud. You know, behind closed doors and in front of my face. So, you know, but I didn't. I necessarily never thought Cleveland because you know they had went to three straight finals. They had, if you remember, that year they had particularly a new team with Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and those guys.
Yep.
So as far as making that big of a trade for us four guys, I didn't think that was going to happen. But I wound up going there, and I didn't believe it. I remember getting a call saying I'm going to Cleveland. I just didn't believe it because of who they were at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going there, you know, I remember went to Atlanta and everybody was so embracing it. You know, I didn't know how I would fit. I didn't know how things were going to go, but I was excited about being there. And I got a chance to learn from, you know, some of the best guys ever. You know, LeBron obviously is one of the best ever to ever lace him up. You know, he's one of the smartest basketball players you'll ever find. You know, got a chance to learn from T. Lou, who's a great, great coach. You know, K. Love, you know, all-star guy. You know, J.R., Tristan, those guys that had been in the finals knew what it took to win. So I learned every single day, you know, just, you know, how to become a better player, how to work, what it takes to stay at that level. So I learned a lot.
Was it then a disappointment when you got traded? How did you feel about when you were there for a short period and then suddenly you're on the move again?
Oh, no, it wasn't a disappointment. And next year, that's when Bron went to L.A., and it was kind of a rebuilding type of atmosphere. And, you know, I wanted to play, you know, I wanted to get a shot back to play in the playoffs because, you know, I just felt like I just wanted to play on a contender team or a team that wanted to play for something. And, you know, I think everybody knew, like, it was about five or six of us that got traded, and I was kind of like the last one.
Hmm.
And but I was excited, you know, to be able to come to Portland and, you know, get a chance to play with these guys. Obviously, we had a lot of battles when I was with Utah and playing against Dame and CJ, those guys, six times a year, you know, yeah. preseason and regular season. And I think it was a match made in heaven. I really enjoyed my time here.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get to that, because I want to talk to you about your experience in Portland. One of the things that inspired me to want to talk to you about your evolution is because there was, and I wish I could remember who it was said it to me, but they recall that you had a workout when we were talking about handling pressure, that you had a workout for a team where you were so worked up or nervous that you threw up. Do you remember? You remember that workout?
I forgot what team it was, but yeah, I had a big anxiety problem when I first got into the league in college, but then when I got into the league, and it was I forget what team it was, but yeah, I was so anxious to just, you know, living out my dream, and you know, I had a hard time handling it at that time because I didn't have it really growing up, you know, so. You know, it was tough for me to deal with, but yeah, I did it, and you know, it was something to remember. You know, but you know, it's part of my journey, though.
Well, at what point in the workout did you toss your cookies?
I don't know. I don't remember. I think it was probably at the beginning. More than likely, it was at the beginning.
Yeah, and you. So, what were the teams that you worked out for? How many did you work out for?
It was a lot of teams. I think I worked out for Chicago, Orlando. Let me see. Chicago, Orlando. I think Minnesota, Phoenix. That's a blur.
Not a problem.
I got.
So where did?
This is about five more things.
Okay. Where did the anxiety come from?
I actually don't. I mean, I really don't know. So growing up, you know, everybody gets nervous, a little bit nervous for the game, but yep. I never dealt with anything. So I think for a long time, I thought it stemmed from just, you know, playing. You know, I played at Mississippi State. I sat out a year. So my first game coming back, you know, playing in the preseason for Duke. And my first game, I was super, super anxious because I've been waiting a whole year to play. Mm. So I had, I had threw up before that game. So I go through it, and I start doing it for every game. And at the time, I didn't think it was a problem because I'm still going out there performing. I'm not, you know, I'm fine or whatever. But once I got in the league, you know, it's my first year, probably my first and second year. It was my first year. You know, it was still happening, and I was like, you know, I needed to get help, you know, just how to handle it. Not that anxiety is something to be, you know, ashamed about or anything like that, but just how to handle it so I can go out there and still perform, because it became a lot on my body just to be doing that before every game.
Yeah.
It felt good to get help, and I worked my way through it. You know, now I don't deal with it, but, you know, I help a lot of people out, you know, with anxiety, because a lot of people know my story.
Yeah,
and it's been great doing that.
Yeah, no doubt. How did you get help? Who did you talk to? I'll be honest. I think it takes a lot of courage to do that, particularly in competitive sports and professional sports, because so many people have a weird way of looking at it as a weakness, and so guys are reluctant to ask for help, or you know, things have changed. I think it's become more acceptable to look for it because guys like yourself have spoken out, but it's hard to admit that and, you know, and reach out thinking that somebody might look at you a different way because of it.
Oh, most definitely. I think that was my biggest thing. That was you know, it kind of feels like, in a way, kind of like embarrassing. Mm. You know, in a certain way, but, you know, when you really realize that everybody deals with something, you know what I mean? They may show it in different ways, it may come up in different ways in their life, but everybody deals with something, you know, on this level, the stretches, the, you know, sometimes depression, anxiety, whatever they deal with, you know. And once I learned that, you know, you feel just more comfortable that other people are going through it with you. You know, I read a lot of guys that go through it, like Kevin Love had. I think I was still in Cleveland when he came out with his piece about, you know, him going through depression. Yep. But when you're around K-Love, you would never know it because he's always upbeat and, you know, just goes about his day. So, you know, things like that really help guys out. And when I stopped looking at it like it was like something wrong with me, you know, rather than just something I just got to deal with, then I think I really got better. But I started talking to Dr. Parasamy, who is Metal World Pieces, old psychiatrist.
Okay.
Or psychologist. And, you know, I talked with her for months, and she really got me started on this. And I really, you know, give her a lot of credit.
Yeah. So the first couple times in the playoffs, this is where I first noticed, like, I would see you play, and I just thought there were times where you were on it, and I thought, man, that guy can really play. And in the postseason, I think with the first time with Utah and then with Cleveland, I don't know whether the anxiety came back. I don't know whether it was the press. I don't know what it was, but you didn't look yourself when you played. And what... help me understand what was going on with you in those situations.
Yeah, so my third year, we made the playoffs. We won like 50 games. Towards the end of the season, I had hyperextended my knee really bad, and I was dealing with some knee issues. I didn't take enough time to really, you know, get myself right. So I was battling that, and then it was like right around the time of the playoffs. So we go into the playoffs. And at this time, I'm coming off the bench. And, you know, the Clipper series, I played solid. You know, I played solid. But then the Golden State series, it was just – my knee was just bothering me like crazy. And, you know, I just didn't perform well. At the end of the day, you judge on what you do when you're out there. Hmm. And that was a learning experience for me, you know, just going forward. And then going to the next year, you know, Cleveland was the next year. It was just a lot thrown at me. Like during that time, you know, it was, you know, I was 25. I was on a rookie contract. I had a wife that I had a son, and I had a wife that was pregnant with twins. We had the twins in the middle of like game three of the first round. You know, I'm in a new situation trying to figure everything out.
Yep.
I'm in a different role than I was in Utah, you know, where I was basically had the neon green light, you know, before I left. And then now I'm playing with better players. I'm playing with great players, and it was tough for me to transition and figure out where I was going to fit on a consistent basis. Like some games I would, you know, be able to play like I wanted to play, but then it was other games where I had to sit around and wait. And you know, it was a learning experience. It helped me out to where I am now, but you know, it was just tough for me to really just turn the corner. And by the time I did it, I had a good game in the finals against Golden State. But, you know, it was just too little too late by that time. And, you know, but I don't regret anything about it. You know, you go through certain things just to get better.
Yeah, that all of that makes perfect sense. And I often feel like the media and fans aren't always aware that, like, you guys got lives going on, right? You got real life stuff going on that is at times going to affect you on the court, whether you want it to or not. And I'll be honest, I wasn't aware of all that. All I knew was when you went to Cleveland, and maybe this is partly on me, because I thought, man, you were like a really nice addition to what they needed. Like I felt like you could do some things there that were going to make them better. And when it didn't show up in the postseason the way I expected, I was like, ah, you know, there are players, you know, in the league who they can be really good in the regular season. And then the test is, can they go to that next level in the postseason? And I felt like you had the ability to do that. And then when it didn't show up consistently, I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm wrong. But clearly that wasn't the case, and that was the beauty of you like going to Portland. Like when you went to Portland, I felt redeemed. You know, like I was like, okay, that's the Rodney Hood in the postseason that I thought that I was going to see. What allowed you? Like how? Where did that shift? Where did that transformation happen for you? Between what happened in Cleveland postseason and what you did for Portland?
I mean, well, I think it's just a part of the journey. I mean, that's part of why a lot of people succeed is going through tough times and coming up short or whatever the case may be. You know, I was young. I was still young during that time. I'm still young now, not saying I'm old, but, you know, that was in my third or fourth season, and, you know, you learn from every experience. And by that time I got to Portland, I felt like I was a seasoned veteran. I knew what it took to not only play well in the playoffs, but win in the playoffs. And I was the same way. You know, I felt really revived because I knew I could, play really, really well on the high stage. And I got a chance to prove that, you know, and got a chance to go to the Western Conference Finals with a great group of guys and, you know, really show the world what I can do on that stage. And, you know, I felt really rejuvenated, you know, after that project, after that season.
So what is it about Portland? When I look at you and I look at Carmelo, and it feels like vets go to Portland and they get to become their best selves. Or I don't, you know, I might be painting with too broad a brush, but is there something about the organization or the atmosphere? What is it that seems like vets can come in and really shine?
Well, I think it's just the organization in general. You know, I think Neil O'Shea deserves a lot of credit. You know, if you look at myself, you look at Melo and a few other guys that came in, they came in after quote-unquote tough situations, where he saw guys with what they really are and not the situation that they were in. And, when I got on the phone with him and we was talking, when I was getting traded, and he was like, you know, you're going to be the guy that, you know, we were in Utah. You know, we're going to give you the ball. We're going to feature you. You know, we're going to play you. You know, we believe in you. Like, those type of things made me want to come here. And obviously, you know, Coach Stotts is amazing. Just let guys play and let guys be themselves. And I think that's the reason why, you know, the Trailblazers have been so successful for so many years. And then it also helps, you know, when you know, you got a superstar like Dame, who's very accepting. You know, he wants guys to be themselves. He's a great leader, you know, and, you know, he's a down-to-earth guy. So those type of things, you know, really helped the transition for me to come here and just be myself and flourish.
You mentioned LeBron as a leader and Damian. What, compare how those guys, their leadership styles?
They're pretty the same. You know, I think, you know, obviously LeBron is a more like polarizing figure, you know, but he's a great leader, man. He's very in tune to the details. You know, defensively, offensively, you know, both of them leads by example. They're very similar. I think LeBron has a tone about himself that's, you know, especially when it gets to playoff time, where, you know, he's not fucking around, you know. But I think both of them are just great leaders in their own right. They're different, but at the same time, they're the same. They got the same qualities, you know, as far as just, you know, leading guys and trying to win at the end of the day.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that, because with Damian, I mean, they come from such different backgrounds, right? I mean, LeBron was was anointed from like the start, and Dame, you know, was that guy who was always kind of discounted, and so I've always appreciated, like, it makes sense to me that Damian would take care of everybody or relate to that guy, you know, down the line. I often wondered if it's harder for LeBron because he's just never been in that situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he does a good job at it too, though. I think he really, you know, tries to get you know, he gets along with everybody, but he, yep. he really tries to pull people under their wing, and you know, like whether it's shooting after practice with certain guys, you know, he jokes around with everybody. We all go out to dinner. We all went out to dinner and all those type of things. So he does it. You know, it's that's the shocking part. You know, honestly, because coming in, you think like, all right, he's you know one of the most. He's like you know up there the greatest sports figures of all time, regardless of sports. And he's taking time out to shoot with you and talk to you sometimes and, you know, and go out to eat and jet laugh and joke around. And you know, he's a regular person. And that's what's the dope part about LeBron.
Yeah. No, no, no. And I agree. And I actually meant it as a compliment that he is able to do that in spite of the fact that he hasn't had that, you know, that kind of experience as a, as a player.
Sure.
So, Charles Barkley, as I'm probably you're probably aware, put $100,000 on you guys to win the championship this year. What did you think when you heard that?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's a big fan of you know our team and the guys on our team and how we play ball and you know hopefully we get healthy. Hopefully we get all the way healthy. You know, with Zach. Zach Collins, you know, Nurk, CJ, you know, me getting full, back to my full self. And, mm-hmm. you know, by the end of the season, we hit full stride and, you know, we really make some noise. You know, I think we have a real chance, but, you know, it's about a continuity, you know, just everybody being available yeah. and getting that chemistry that way. But it's just going to take some time. We just got to stay afloat right now and keep the boat sailing. And
yep.
then when those guys get back, hit the ground running.
Now, Chuck has kind of come off you guys a little bit. What would you say to him about him? He hasn't jumped off the wagon, but he's like, he's got one foot dangling. Like,
it's understandable. You know, I know we've kind of struggled a little bit. You know, with guys kind of being out, trying to find an identity while they've been out, but. You know, it's understandable, but hopefully by the end of the season, we got him back.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like what you guys did against Philadelphia, obviously it's one game, and, you know, teams sometimes when they're not at full strength and a better team just can't muster the, you know, the focus and intensity. But I feel as if that depth that you guys showed against Philly and have showed just kind of, you know, grinding through these last few weeks with guys out, with Nurk and CJ out, is an indicator of why Charles and a lot of people think you guys have this chance of kind of you know backdooring into something big. Is did you feel like last night was a little bit of validation? I mean, I wonder how much of a boost it is for you guys collectively to go, you know what, we might be as good as we think we are once we get everybody together.
Yeah, I think we really believe in ourselves. You know, we believe in ourselves. We got a lot of veteran guys that know how to play, know how to win. It's played, whether they were here or other places, you know, played on winning organizations and played in the playoffs. So we think we got the right tools. You know, right now it's just about health. You know, it's strictly about health. Getting us right, and then I feel like we can compete, you know, against almost anybody, you know, because we've shown it, you know, when we were healthy. So, I feel good. We got a lot of guys that stepped up in the absence of guys, you know, whether it's, you know, Ant, you know, CJ Ellaby last night, you know, Nazir Little had a 30-point game against Milwaukee, you know, Gary Trent is coming into his own as a player, like, I go on and on about guys who are really playing well, and once everybody gets back together, you know, just try to keep that continuity.
Now, the big question with you guys is defensively, I think, how you guys get locked in. That's sort of been an issue all season long. And when I look at the group that you have, I don't see any reason why you guys can't be better defensively. What do you think has to happen on that front?
I think it's just, you know, we just got to be consistent. You know, we show it at times, you know, especially in the half court. But I think, you know, we just got to have the mentality that that's what's going to get us over the hump, you know. And I think we show it at times. Last night we showed it. you know, that, you know, we can be good defensively when we locked in, but, you know, we just haven't showed that consistency yet. And, you know, once we do that, I think we'll take off. But, and sometimes, you know, I wouldn't say this is a relatively new group, but, you know, we got new guys out there that's trying to mesh with each other. And, you know, we got the tools. Like you said, we got the tools. We just got to make it consistent.
All right. Oh, by the way, just one last thing. So you, if I'm not mistaken, you're making this year, not to bring money into it, but you're making this year more than you made, like, maybe your first four or five seasons combined. I just wonder, what does that do for you as far as security? Or does that change anything, especially, you know, with a wife and kids and all that? Is there any shift for you when you're able to go to another financial plateau?
Yeah, a little bit, man. It's and that's what, you know, money means to me, is security and comfort. You know, it's nothing that, you know, I necessarily want to buy or anything like that, but just being able to take care of my family at a rate where, you know, I don't have to worry about that as much, you know, as I did my first four or five seasons. And because, you know, when you're young, you always plan for a contract or the next contract. And I felt like, you know, sometimes in free agency, I was coming up, you know, short some, you know, some summers. And to finally get, you know, a contract where you feel like, all right, I, you know, I can set a lot of money aside for my kids, my family. I can do stuff for my, that I always wanted to do growing up, you know, for my mom and dad and, you know, sister, brother, and all those things. It really means a lot. So, you know, I feel like I got a lot more in me, but, you know, this one was a big boost. I can relax and just really just focus on basketball now.
Yeah, and how, like, that's the other part, though, is, like, you want to take care of everybody, but at the same time, it's, you know, looking at it, I mean, I think people don't understand whatever they're putting in the paper, like, cut that in half. That's right. What you're actually getting, right? And then everybody wants to get on the gravy train. How do you handle that? How good are you at handling that? Because being able to say no, I think, is probably one of the hardest challenges for a guy once he makes it, because everybody wants to feel like they made it with you.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, me growing up, you know, I'm the baby, you know, even out of most of my friends, you know, I'm the youngest. So, you know, it's always extremely hard to say no, because you grow up and you want to do everything for everybody, right? That's the dream.
Yep.
And, but you understand, once you understand money, you know, money runs out. The faster you get it, the faster it can leave. And no matter how much you think it is, you know, a lot of guys go broke, or they have a hard time after they leave the league because they spent so much money. They were, you know, spending so much money while they were in it. And, you know, I think I have a great support system. I think, you know, just understand, I always had a small circle, and they understand I do a lot for a lot of people. But they understand sometimes when I told them to hold on or not right now, or just under that, like, little subtle things that let them know that, you know, I'm thinking about them, but I just can't do it right now.
Yep.
And it's tough, you know what I mean? Because our you know, our salaries are public, you know, it's in Google for information, and, you know, people see that and they count your pockets as well. So, you know, and then they don't understand, you know, cut it in half with taxes, you got expenses, you know, I got a family. And it's about living for the next 30 years, not the next 30.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's something that, you know, us as basketball players are understanding more and more, you know, as we get older and more educated.
Yeah. So who clued you into that? Like, who, you obviously learned that lesson, but not every guy gets that or gets that information early on where they're smart. What, who got you on that train to thinking about the big picture?
I think, you know, probably a mix between my dad and my wife, you know, cause, you know, my wife, knows how big a heart I got. And sometimes having a big heart and having money kind of don't mesh, because sometimes you could be doing things that's not in the best interest of yourself or your family just because you got a big heart and you don't want to let people down. Then my dad has always been like the filter to, as far as to get to me. And he's always kept people at bay and helped them understand as well that, I can't buy everybody a house. I can't buy everybody a car. You know, I can't pay everybody bills, and all those things. So he's been a big help for me, as far as throughout that process.
Yeah. It sounds like you found the right woman, man. Sounds like she, being married, having kids, it's like, you don't really know who you married. Yeah, like you get, I don't know, as a guy, sometimes we get married for the wrong reasons or what's the attraction. And it's when you get in the foxhole and the bullets are flying, that's when you find out whether you really made the right choice. That's always been my position.
Exactly. You know, it started off as a love story, and it was all, but my love for her has grown so much, just from after we got married. And, we've been through so many things together, with her personally, with me personally, with basketball. And, that's what builds the bond and lasts a lifetime,
I agree. Hey, by the way, so you tear the Achilles, and then was there any concern that Portland wasn't going to come through? I mean, what did it mean for you to be able to sign? Because you signed this new deal in November. What was that like? At knowing that you were up to get a deal, and now you're having to deal with coming back from an Achilles tear.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I was extremely just grateful that they believed in me when they traded for me, and I came through. And I worked out in Portland rehabbing my Achilles, and they saw the work that I put in. They saw how hard I was going to get back, and they saw that I was, I was checking off all the boxes, and I was going to get back to myself eventually, physically, they knew how, important I was to the team and how much I wanted to be here. You know, I think that speaks a lot to them as well, that I actually want to be in Portland and I want to be a part of this franchise, for many years to come. So, I was extremely excited about getting a chance to come back and building something special again.
Well, Rodney, I love your story. I love your spirit. I appreciate seeing guys like you, fight through things and come out on top and being a success in a multitude of ways. I think sometimes we define success maybe not in the healthiest ways possible, but I've appreciated watching you grow and evolve, and I really appreciate you coming on and spending some time talking about what you've been through and letting people have some insight into exactly what it is and what makes up Rodney Michael Hood. So with all that, thank you, wishing you the best of luck, and looking forward to when we can cross paths again.
All right, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
That does it for this episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. All guests appearing on Bucher and Friends receive a gift from Mizzen and Main, fashionable menswear made out of performance fabric. And if you've ever wondered why I always look so cool and comfortable on TV despite whatever heat may be thrown my way, it's because I'm wearing Mizzen and Main. In our next podcast, I'm not sure who we're going to have in our next podcast. Could be a guest, could be a Bucher friendless, still working on that. But whoever or whatever, I promise, it'll be good. In the meantime, please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Our sponsors, Mizzen and Main, and every other one appreciates knowing that you are engaged with the show. It also helps us, helps me to know. You want more guests? You want more friendless? I take my directions from you. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.